Well, hello, you guys. I'm Rick Dancer. Welcome to our podcast in the little world of Montana, where I live. But we go all over the world and we go everywhere and we talk about everything and anything. Well, almost. There's some things that YouTube and Facebook won't let me talk about. Imagine. But I haven't been put in jail for a long time. So that's a really good thing. Our sponsors tonight are Albert Taylor, Endless Possibilities, an organization in Eugene, Springfield, works with people with different abilities. They're super awesome people, and they're always looking for people to help them because it's a really big job that they do. But if you're looking for something that makes you want to go home at the end of the day and you'll be tired, but you'll also know that you made a difference, working with people with different abilities is where it's at. Also, our major sponsor, Risk Dental, Dr. Michael Bratland. He believes in your civil liberties as much as he does taking care of your dental work. He's a great guy. Tell him you got it here at Rick Dancers, that you saw it on here. He's a really good friend of mine, and he and I love to get into trouble and talk about civil liberties, your freedom, and your rights to be able to say whatever you want. I've been on billboards with Michael saying, "We back the blue," and we ended up in the newspaper. They weren't real happy with us, but that's not why we're here, is it? To make people happy. Also, Montana Oral Surgeon and Dental Implant Center in Helena. They have offices in Helena, Butte. They also are in Bozeman and Great Falls. Do wonderful work. They're good people. And what I like about them best is when you go in to have teeth extracted or anything done, they put you out. I don't need to be awake for anything that's going to be grinding in my head. Also sponsored by Matt McCarl, New Leaf Hyperbarics and Wellness Center. If you've never had a hyperbaric treatment, what the hell are you doing? It's the best thing ever. It's pure oxygen. It's like taking thousands of Motrin, but not, you wouldn't want to take thousands of Motrin, but that gives you that effect. First time I did, I came out of there and felt like I was back in the 70s. I thought I was high. It felt so good, but not without the paranoia. I didn't have that, but it felt so good. It was so awesome. He also does light therapy, and they just have something new that monitors and teaches you how to do meditation. Tim Schley, my guy, the guy who works with me, is going to be doing a video on that. He said it was really fun. And our last sponsor, Rains Heating and Air Conditioning out of Crestwell. They got specials going. Now is not the time. If you haven't got on their program where you get your heat pumps and everything monitored and taken care of throughout the year, you're probably too late. But they do it all the time. Every time my heat pump goes out, it's always when we get into a snowstorm. Not in Montana, because that's all we have is snowstorms. In fact, we're in the middle of one right now. So isn't that right, Steve?
That's right. Exactly right.
So Steve Henderson is actually from Oregon, or was in Oregon, and we both moved to the same area. He lives in Winston, which is about 10 minutes north of me, and we were within a month of each other of being in the same area, and that's how we met originally. And Steve started talking to me. Tonight, our topic is super interesting. It's vertical farming, and no, he doesn't do it in Montana.
Not yet.
Not yet. But you could, actually, couldn't you?
Oh, absolutely. We've been having several discussions about that already. So,
because it's been snowing in Texas where your actual vertical farm is located.
Yeah, a freak storm. But yes, we were kind of surprised. One morning we woke up and there's 5-6 inches on the ground. So, yes.
And so Steve wakes up and just goes, "Oh, am I home?"
It did feel good.
And Steve's partner in crime is Larry Shuttlesworth. Am I saying that right?
Yes, you are. Exactly.
And so now, Larry, you're also an Oregonian prior, or you still are an Oregonian. Well, I guess you're half Texan and half Oregonian, right?
Half and half. Yeah. I was raised in Texas, but moved to Oregon many, many years ago.
So you live in Sweet Home when you're in Oregon?
Yes.
So tell people, either one of you, just start. vertical farming, what are you doing? Because this is not just, you're like one of the biggest in Texas, and you've got, you're doing stuff that other vertical, I may have heard of this before, and hydroponics and all that, but you're doing this with like a twist. Explain what's going on here. Either one of you kick in there.
Well, so what we are doing is we are the largest vertical farm in North Texas. There are other, I would say hydroponic farms in Texas, so we can't really claim the hydroponic term. But when you're talking vertical, that means we're growing up. And that means you get more yield for what you're growing up instead of, you know, horizontal. So when you're looking here, you know, we were experimenting and doing some leafy greens. This is pretty common for even a standard.
That's life. That's just fun.
Right. Yeah. That's even.
Sorry about that.
This is what you'd see. So anybody can buy these kind of off the shelf. There's different applications that you would see in a traditional greenhouse, say residential, but what we're doing is commercial. This is just a small snippet of what you're seeing. Leafy greens are common. And when we say hydroponic, everybody goes, hey, you guys are growing marijuana. Because that's, the industry started with the hydroponic, or, you know, it's like, hey, let's do some weed. Well, no, that's not exactly what we're doing. We're doing vegetables. We're doing subsistence type of growing that's substantial. And what we're doing is then selling to a major buyer that's then sending it off to the stores. So this is where we're kind of creating this newfound vertical farm piece. But the vertical farm, yeah, go ahead.
Got what are question. Those? What are those right there?
So these are jalapeno peppers. These are the wow. first time we are the only company that we know of in the world that are growing jalapeno peppers in a vertical tower. We have not found it anywhere else in the United States, nor have we talked to anyone else around the world. But we are successfully growing jalapeno plants. We actually have, we're trying to get in the record books, but we're the first company to ever grow and harvest a jalapeno pepper in North Texas in its history in November. That's never been done.
So I was reading through your stuff. This one, you can, because of hydroponics and the way you're doing this in warehouses and greenhouses and that kind of thing, you can do this 365 days a year.
Yeah. So no seasons whatsoever. And that's the whole idea. We can take what a traditional farm would have, like, you know, you need summertime, you know, spring, summer, harvest. But we're just, when we section this off, when we start growing the plants, then we can actually monitor this to start harvesting in sequential standards, like in a week. So say Monday through Friday, we'll start here and then end over on the end, and it'll be a full harvest. But that happens weekly. That'll happen monthly, that sort of thing.
Now, I know, like, Larry, one of the big concerns in Montana, even Montana right now, is especially right now, the snowpack is so low. And the demand for water. I mean, I live on farmland, right on the edge of farmland. And they're always talking about, you know, with the farmers using this much water. You guys use, like, what, 95% less water than
Yes, 95%, and it all depends on really what you're growing, because in some cases we can use 98% less.
That's so, right. What do you hope to do with this? I mean, how big are you right now in terms of, like, who are you? How much are you selling? How much can you grow? That kind of thing.
Well, we can't get into a lot of details about that, but we actually sell to a distributor that distributes to 11 states. So I think they manage, Steve, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's about 1,900 grocery stores. Wow. So right now we're just a small piece of that, but we have plans on growing a lot, but, you know, baby steps at a time to get to the point where we need to be. We don't want to grow too fast, but we have the opportunity to really, really expand and expand in a very big way.
So why is this so popular right now?
Well, because of transportation costs, these companies, for instance, if we're close to them and we're growing for them, we save them millions of dollars in transportation costs. Because most of the produce, for instance, that goes to these places comes from, 2,000-3,000 miles from here. So that transportation on a semi adds up, and it becomes very expensive.
So Steve, you could really, literally, you could put in a greenhouse. Like, is that what it is? Is it a greenhouse or just a warehouse with lights? I mean, what it is?
It's a greenhouse. So we're traditional greenhouses are what we're using, but that's what we bought to start. Mm-hmm. But we're looking in. So you're correct. We can actually go into any building, and with what we have done is a patent pending process. It's a recirculation process. And you talked about Montana and water. It's funny you mentioned that. I've actually talked to the USGS on a flight down back home, back down to Texas, about Montana specifically. And there's a big problem with water. And so they're very interested in what we're doing. And that's why the conversations are coming up north. But it's also in, you know, obviously Texas, we always talk about and hear about water problems, but a recent farmer was telling us we're struggling because the water is really, really becoming that problem. And so
yes, it is.
When we're talking about this solution, that's why we can recirculate our water for 60 days. And then we can sell that nutrient base to the public and they can use it for their plants. So the water doesn't get wasted at all. And then we just refill and just keep going. So that's what we've created.
So you could actually, I don't know anything. I'm just a guy. Sure. But if you could franchise this out and somebody could start a plant here in Montana on one of these big barren pieces of land, and I could actually have fresh vegetables and fruit right here in Montana that was grown in one of these houses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're around. And that's the point. It doesn't actually have to be, it could be an existing structure. I mean, the footprint is just that we're trying to reutilize what's already existing. And I think the biggest thing is everybody just wants shiny and new, but really we can coexist and recreate something that's actually very volatile and quick and easy to put together.
So mm-hmm. could you sell this to the homeowner?
We already have something. Our partner sells a residential kit per se. Now you could buy that, and it's just like anything on Amazon. Everybody buys everything on Amazon, but we're looking bigger. We're looking to help small towns and cities, counties. This is all about bringing it back into the United States for us. I mean, this is Texas built, grown, and that's the pride of Texas. And that's why they want it there. So mm-hmm. very understanding.
So between the two of you, give me the big vision. Cause I know from talking to Steve that this is like a, you know, kind of a God thing. And you mm-hmm. feel like, you know, obviously as we go forward in the future, climate change, no climate change, whatever, you know, to get people out of poverty would be the best thing in the world we could do for climate change. Because if you are out of poverty, then you will care more about taking care of the environment. If you're not, then you are struggling and you don't give a damn because you got to eat and you got to feed your mm-hmm. kids and warm yourself. So you could go to the desert in Africa and put one of these things in and build an environmental community. And that's the way to solve climate change to me.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. That makes sense. That makes sense.
You're exactly right. And to that point, we can actually put solar on this to be even more self-sustained because that's what we've been moving to. But as far as remote places, we're actually talking to another place that's even colder than Montana. No hints there, but there's a big struggle. And it's kind of like, yes, we're using too much of that footprint to create something that's a little more simplistic than people may think.
Because you were saying in the notes that you sent me, one greenhouse will displace, and I don't know how big that is, you can explain to people, but 3 to 4 acres of farmland.
Mm-hmm. And that's about 35 feet by 90 to 100 feet. Wow. Of greenhouse space.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So what excites you the most about this?
Go ahead. No, you go first.
No, that's
all
right.
I think what excites me is it is a challenge. And we're a faith-based company. So we really enjoy hiring people, bringing them in and seeing them flourish. And so, I mean, to me, that's what makes me excited. Seeing them learn a new trade. They get excited about what we're doing. For instance, yesterday was quite a day. We released 72,000 ladybugs into the greenhouses to eat aphids. And so we had a bunch of children there from the schools watching this happen, and they learned a valuable lesson about, first they were kind of scared of the ladybugs, but when they saw what they were doing, they were like, this is very cool. So it was good.
So this is much more than growing food.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'll elaborate
on that. So okay. Really, before Larry and I even started anything as far as business related in Amarillo, we actually visited the local college. We wanted to see the resource to say, hey, what do you have for farming program? Because obviously Texas is agriculture and cattle. And they have a program, but they just couldn't get enough students to come in for, say, horticulture, those type of things. Uh-huh. Now, there's a lot of competition in the schools, but when we told them what we're doing, that what they just couldn't believe that somebody like us was actually looking to come into that area. And what we've developed is the relationship. So the big picture is the education piece. It's the sustainability to grow out and work with bigger communities, even states, for that example. We have then started to create some curriculum that now the students are going to be coming to do an R&D and everything on our property, but that's just going to translate to having more students come to there locally. So it's really about just expanding this idea that, yes, it's hydroponic growing, but how do you do it effectively and how do you sustain for a long term? And we're doing that. So that's what excites me.
Because hydroponics has been around for quite a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But what you've done is taken what they were doing and then obviously what the cannabis industry has figured out.
Yeah.
And thank you, marijuana growers.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
I'm not getting high off your product, but I'm getting high off of the wonderful things I'm doing to feed the world, but you've learned. And so now you realize that this is on a bigger scale. You could really help a community out because imagine what you could do. Like I'm thinking like Steve in a little place like Townsend. You bring in, you take an existing building that no one's using. You develop a program at the high school for kids to learn, because not all kids here grow up on a farm, but they grow up in the little town. And you teach them how to do this. So not only can people be more resourceful in their own like gardening at home, but they also become raising vegetables and fruits and stuff like that for the community that they live in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. The story where Larry and I went back to Hewlett Packard and met, but we actually later on met when I was a network analyst for a school district, the Educational Service District. He was teaching in Lebanon, and they had a program that came in and said, let's put a greenhouse in here and show the kids how to put it together and how to grow food. And we're not dissing dirt by any means, but hydroponic is so much more dynamic and so much easier than people can realize. Now there are a lot of behind the scenes things you have to do, but take for example, living in Oregon all those years, they have tax and you can't even do rainwater catch or something like that, right? So I don't know if it's still legal, but it was when I was there. You can't put a rainwater catch on your house or anything in the city. So could you imagine catching all that water and using that to sustain your farm? Because you don't have to pull it out of the water, out of the ground. So it's just, there's a lot of give and takes and a lot of systems that we can change.
Well, I remember talking to a company because we were on a well in Springfield, and it would in the summer get like half a gallon a minute, which was fine for showering and taking care of our stuff, but we had nothing we could grow. And a guy came out to my house because I did a story on him, and he came out and said, man, if you put a cistern in your front yard and ran all your gutters into that cistern for fresh water, just like, what do they call that? Brown water or something. And he says, then you could turn that in the summer. You could be watering your yard with, if you had a 2,200 gallon tank down there, you would fill that up in Oregon in no time. And do you think, and it would have been so easy for us to do because our house sat on a hill and it was really set up for the whole thing. So it's like, if people were building their homes thinking, I really like this idea. I think that would be phenomenal that you could, and with hydroponics, you can, and an indoor where you can control the temperature You can grow stuff. How much faster does it grow that way?
So what we've seen now, we're doing obviously something that's never been done. So we're comparing it to a traditional jalapeno plant. We've been able to cut off at least 10 days of growing time to fruit. Mm-hmm. So it's very substantial when we're looking, and we've actually had a different variety that actually was even quicker. So we're setting a standard, and we're doing tomatoes now, and it's not even comparable to what you would see anywhere.
So is this the part you can't tell me, or you'd have to kill me? What?
Well, we wouldn't go that far, but yeah.
No. Oh, Larry, I trust you, but Steve lives really near me.
I mean, I have to hide from me.
He doesn't have to kill me. He could just tell stories about me and make my life more miserable. You know, I mean, all you got to do is start one rumor in this community, and I'm gone. Oh. You know.
Oh, well, it goes both ways there.
That's right. So yeah, I have a bigger audience than you do.
Yeah, that's right.
So what do you? I mean, without giving away secrets, is there something you're doing? Is that the brand that you're doing that is like on steroids, just bam, making this stuff work like that?
No, well, we have an excellent grower.
Yeah, there's nothing specific off in the industry itself that we're saying, you know, anabolic steroids or something weird that we're putting in a plant.
No. I didn't mean that. I meant just like the plants are growing on steroids.
Well,
like, is it just a process that you have that's your secret process?
No, that's what I'm saying. It's just how it's standardized. And I'll let Larry talk more.
Well, the thing is, it's. They receive nutrients constantly all day long, all night. So it's not like you plant them in the ground and you add some nutrients, fertilizers to that, and then it rains and it goes away. You know, it's organic nutrients that we use, and it's just they constantly receive that all the time, along with the right temperature, the right amount of light, and all of that combined. And of course the ladybugs, you got to have those, but you get all that combined and the plant loves it. It's a good environment for it. And it just continues to grow. It
grows so quicker, why Texas?
Well, it's kind of a long story too. Anyway, you know, I was raised here in this area. And
what happened to your accent? You sound like an Oregonian. Because you didn't live in Southern. I get people out here from Southern Oregon, and I go, how can you have an accent?
Yeah, really. Well, you ought to hear my twin sister. Yes.
But anyway, yeah. Yes. Or when you get mad, then Larry starts going, I'll tell you.
I tell you, man. I do. Yes, Steve? I got a little bit of an accent.
Hear me.
But no, the plants are pretty resilient. They, you can tell when they're happy and when they're not. And so when they're happy, they just do what they're supposed to do.
Did you guys know anything? You had to know something, but it's not like you guys are a couple of computer geeks. You're not like farmers.
Well, after I left Hewlett Packard, I went to the USDA. Plus in Oregon, we've had my wife and I've had greenhouses, and we've had our own gardens and all kinds of stuff there. Plus the greenhouse that was put in at the school system in Lebanon, I was allowed to put that in for the students. And so along with farming experience growing up and that, and along with Steve's experience in farming, we kind of put it together.
What did you do with farming, Steve?
Well, I grew up in Harrisburg. I graduated as a Harrisburg Eagle. And
Harrisburg, Oregon for our...
Harrisburg, Oregon. Yeah, not Pennsylvania.
That's a farming community.
Yeah. Grass seed capital of the world, at least it was when I was in school. And so I worked at Dietering Orchard. I worked at farms all the way around, even for some people in my church, learned the dynamics. I was more of a workhorse, you know, move the irrigation pipe from here to there. That's primarily, but, family member is into the horticulture industry, worked at Oregon State University, managed the farm there for 16 plus years, worked with many professors. Some of the things which have accolades of, like, say, the first tomato species to go on the space shuttle, those type of things. So there's a lot of great community sources that we basically said, hey, yeah, we don't have the experience, so let's grab the people that do, and let's see if we can make this work together as a community. And it's been, it's as you can see, it's just been going fast and furious. Mm-hmm.
So how did you guys, I know you connected through Hewlett Packard years ago, but you've obviously maybe been friends or something. I mean, I don't want to jump to conclusions.
Well, friends.
Larry, I know you have better taste than that, but I just.
Oh, gosh.
So, but how did you, I mean, were you sitting around, you know, drinking a Diet Coke or something and thinking, hey, you know, we ought to feed the world. You know, I mean, where did that come from?
Well, I retired from HP, and Steve left, and he went to Florida for a time period, and was working what were you doing down there exactly?
I was doing software sales.
Yes, software sales.
I thought he was working at a tiki bar or something.
No, that was
yes, my ties.
Right before he left, he had to get some tips. So anyway, he, you know, they moved back to Oregon, and I found out, so I called him immediately because I had some ideas about some projects to work on, and asked Steve if he'd be interested in working with me on these projects. And he said, yes. And well, the rest is history. We sat down, we started working out a plan, and it's been 5 years ago. And yeah, here we are. And we also played music together, and we're both musicians. So,
yeah.
So do you guys sing to the plants, or I mean, is it?
Sometimes.
Yeah, once in a while. I threaten them a lot, just like chickens, if you don't lay the egg. You know?
If I don't see another jalapeno pepper on you,
yeah, right.
I can uproot you, you know. I planted you, I can uproot you.
Exactly, exactly. Steve was working as a technician at the school system, like he said earlier, and then I was teaching, and that's how we made this journey.
So you, Larry, you live in Sweet Home for most of the time.
I do.
And Steve, you're in Winston. So how often are you guys in Texas then?
Well, I've been here now for about a month and a half. I've been here this time. So it'll be about 3 months before I go back.
Okay. And Steve, what about you? How often are you back?
It just depends. Earlier it was a little bit easier, but now we're so busy. If I get back here maybe once and every 2 months, that'd be great. But it's not, you know, the whole idea is the busyness is the great part, but it's about making those connections. And like I said, the building a bigger base that goes outside of Texas. Obviously our buyer wants to just, cause we only have one customer. So that's amazing for us, but you know, we've said explicitly we're going to be building something that won't stay here, just so you understand. But then we'll do everything for you, which is amazing, but now we're going to give, there's opportunity to do bigger and better things. So
what's the dream?
The dream is to put every one of these recirculation hydroponic systems anywhere outside of major cities, small towns, even the ones that are remote. The whole idea is, I think we get caught up in going, hey, you know what? It's a cool idea, but we just can't do that. Or that just won't work. And Larry and I just kind of got frustrated. We're like, you know what? We know this will work and we're going to make it work. And the group of people we brought with us made it happen. Mm-hmm. So we got lucky there.
So would you sell the idea to someone else and they do it? Or would you have set up these plants? Plants, that's kind of, you kind of have a plant, don't you? a plant. What do you say when you say that? You have to have a language, right?
Don't worry.
You guys could have a ball. I could have a ball with your just all the innuendo things that you could have out of growing. I mean, you could have so much, you know. The only one that would be better for me would be a dairy farm, because you could milk everything you could have out of that. It'd be the cheesiest thing I've ever done in my life.
Oh,
but
boy.
You know what? When you're all done, you're the cream of the crop.
Well, I have been corrected before. It's varieties of plants. I said breeds, and I was corrected. We're not breeding animals.
Plants don't breed, yeah. So would you sell these as a community wants to buy it, you go in and set it up and they run it? Or would you always want to be, is this going to be your organization starting another one in Montana or Oregon? Or California.
Yeah,
I just say it's a little bit of both because it just all depends on the situation. Some people would want to buy it outright. We go and consult and show them how to set it up and use it, and then it's theirs to use. And then there's those people that would want us, you know, to own one in a certain area, so we would go build it and set it up ourselves. Just all depends. It's
important to have buy-in on this. It's not. You can come in and say a lot of things, but the community has to have buy-in to working this out. I mean, we could go and source the right people, but that just takes a longer time. But as you're saying, you know, we're talking about schools and education. We could be building those programs before it even gets there. That's the great part about it. So when we get into those conversations, yes, we would like to at least own the first parts of this, but the co-op and the mindshare is there. It's not that we're trying to just become this giant conglomerate. It's we're wanting to share, and we want other people to be as successful as we are, because we can't control the variances of communities, you know, like a Townsend versus Missoula or anywhere else. So it's very different and dynamic.
So you sell, you get buy-in from the community, you come in. What do you want to grow? What are the things you think you could do? Do you want students involved? How do you want farmers in the community involved, and kind of that whole thing? And then you guys go in and set up the program, and then the community runs it, or with your help runs it, or something like that.
Yeah. Again, it all depends, because you may have a school system, for instance, that says we have a great FFA program. We would like to adopt that into our FFA program and furnish all the stuff for the school. So it just all depends.
So, you guys said this is a faith-based program. How many people do you have working for you?
Well, we have almost close to 30 people now, and that's been within an 8-month period. So we've been growing at least 200%. And we're going to be hopefully up to 65 employees by July, because we're doing the expansion pieces for the farm. So
what is God up to?
You know, it's... He's just amazing how he puts the right people in the right places all the time.
Exactly.
Like I mentioned earlier, the USGS conversation, I would have never had that opportunity or known somebody that works specifically in the water conservation part of the USGS in Montana.
Right.
I mean, it would take me forever just to get through the whole paperwork. So sitting on a plane and having a conversation was just, those are the opportunities and the people we meet. And I know Larry has had the same experiences.
So several times. And even some of the employees that we have now, that it was a godsend. And how many times have Steve and I sat down and go, man, this is a God thing. And this is a God thing. We said that 1,000 times.
Yep. I'm reading a book called Flip the Switch by a business coach. And he, one of the things he said in it the other day that I was reading, that I thought was powerful. And I'm listening to it. I mean, I'm repeating that over and over in my head. Things don't happen to me, they happen for me.
Mm-hmm.
So then when bad stuff happens, I look at it rather, I'm trying to look at it rather than this is a negative. It's like, what this is happening to help me. So what do I get out of that?
Mm-hmm.
And you know what I mean? It's really, because I'm kind of
like that. It's kind of like that old song. If you remember, it says, thank God for unanswered prayer. Sometimes it's not the way we want it to go, but it's for our own good anyway.
Right. For sure. And so for both of you, Larry, what I love about yours, just because you're in the same, I think same age group as me, we're probably close. And I think retirement, there's no such thing.
I can't stand it.
I think I have so many relatives in there, you know, talking, you know, we're retiring. And I said, well, I'm kind of looking at going into another new career now, because I'm kind of tired of social media. And so I'm looking at another career, and I'm going to turn 65 in June. And they're like, what are you doing? I said, because I think this is where the direction I'm supposed to go. And I love what you're doing, because I think in the bigger picture, you're putting the power back in the consumer, and you're putting the power back in the community. And I think, you know, even right here in Townsend, I think we have in small America, we're getting separate. We're getting things are coming between us and food. I think that's why God could have made us so we didn't have to eat. And I think one, he's a God that's into pleasure too. He knows how fun it is to eat. But two, it's that interaction of community. And we farmers used to bring us together, and now they're so busy and life is so different. Here's a way that you could bring kids together. Cause like Townsend has an awesome FFA program. Mm-hmm. And these are, and they're not all farm kids. There are a lot of kids are from the little inside the little community. So if you gave them a way to see value that they're putting, you know, putting food on the table for people. And what I love about it too, cause I know Steve's heart, like, you know, if you could get really good produce to people who are on a fixed income or who are struggling to make ends meet, which there's millions of them out there now, you know, give them a better shot at having a good meal instead of eating McDonald's shit, you know?
Exactly.
This turns into a ministry. That's what it does.
Well, but isn't that what, honestly, you don't even need that. And I'm not picking on you, Larry, at all. You don't even need that word.
Yeah, no,
this is life. You know what I mean? It's like you found a niche, you found a need, and then you go in and you fill it. But I think for other people sitting out there, I mean, literally as you do your product starts with a seed. Yep. There's a little idea, and I'm sure this sucker has grown way more than you thought. I mean,
faster than we thought, for sure.
Yeah,
it's going fast. And I would say just planting that seed is the idea. But I mean, look, like you said before, we talked about where Larry and I came from. I've been in the IT industry. I was in it for over 25 years. I mean, that's all I knew. But the whole part was we kept seeing the problems and the people, you know, kids going hungry, but communities also struggling. Even watching on social media, when you get even a little town in Australia was flooded, so nothing could come in, and the whole grocery store was depleted. It was gone. And it's like, if you had something local or in that community, and we get approached all the time by local, but of course we're going to make some of the bigger producers upset, you know, because what we're trying to do is kind of spearhead into these communities to say, hey, you know, you can actually do this for yourself instead of buying from the big corporation. We're not trying to disrupt that per se. We're just trying to bridge the gap to say there's more to what you're doing and more to what we can actually go after.
Exactly. Well, I've been listening to, I listen to so many podcasts, it's not even funny. And the number of people really concerned, it's not organic. I don't think it's the organic thing. I think people want to know, and I think more than want, I think we need to know where our food comes from. We've literally grown the nutrition right out of it. So if you can get a community, you know, healthy, because they're growing their own food, they know where that comes from. They're also healthy because you guys, I'm having way too much fun with this, because they're because they're growing together as a community. You know what I mean? Then that spiritual aspect of it, you know? And so all of a sudden you're kind of, I know you're not going after big business that, but you're giving options to people that we're missing because the farm has become a conglomerate that produces massive chunks of tomatoes that don't even have any vitamin C in them and taste like crap. And, you know, a kid goes to his mom and says, I grew this tomato at the garden in the plant at school, and she tastes it. And he goes, I was part of that. You know, you're kind of taking us, honestly, you're kind of through technology and the amazing intellect that we have out there in the world, you're taking farming to the next level, but you're also taking us back to doing it ourselves.
Our roots.
So Rick, let me encourage you about something. You said you want to change, and you're going to trying to retire, so on and so forth, right? So, and you said you were 65 coming up. Well, let me tell you, I'm 75 and I'm not ready to quit yet.
Good.
So,
well, you know what, but here's the thing I think you have to do too. Now we're just spotlight. Welcome to my world where everything just kind of goes weird.
It does, doesn't it?
No, I love this. This is what I think is fun about doing this is you have to have meaning in your life. Mm-hmm. And when meaning disappears or starts to wane, then I think it's that thing, God giving you a little whisper in the ear saying, are you ready? You ready to do something different? Mm-hmm. Ready to go? What if we did this? And then all your friends and people tell you how crazy you are. And you keep pushing through because this didn't happen to me. It happened for me. Yeah. And so you keep moving into that new territory and seeing what happens. And then the best part, I think that what I appreciate the most about God is that we don't get to know the end of the story until we're done.
Right.
And so you never know how or who you're impacting. The motivation has to be not what credit am I going to get.
Right.
It has to be foot on the ground, doing what you're told, understanding, taking risk, pushing yourself. And then in the end, you know, I always have this little vision in my head. You know, God wakes everybody else up. I don't think we go and sit with God in heaven when we die. You know, people get, it's like, I'm sorry, what are you doing? Like, if he really did that, I mean, seriously, if you're up there, grandma's up looking down at you. No,
right.
We'd all be in heaven going, when is this done? I mean, we've been up here for 400 years. And you're going, oh my God, they're bitching again. So we're all asleep. We wake up together and everybody's going, okay, we're here it is. Right. And then God pulls you over and says, see that line of people right there? You had an impact on every one of those lives.
Yeah.
Every one of them. And then look at these people that got impacted off that person's life off that way. So that to me should be the goal of when we start a business or we do things or what we're doing is helping, serving, and not sitting by and treading water. Because, you know, and if I hear one more person say, I just can't wait till Jesus comes, I'm going to scream.
Right.
You know,
we have a lot to do until that happens.
We have so much. And you know, that's what I love about the Jewish world. It Jewish people and their culture, they know that they're here to have a good life. Mm-hmm. So make it a good life. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't talk about heaven or when this is over and all that stuff. They talk about now and being with your kids and doing this and doing that is part of the cultural experience. And ours is all, when do I get out of here? And I get a pass from this.
Yeah, we can't.
Like,
yeah, we
don't do that. It's like, you know, I think.
It's true.
But you guys are doing like that foot on the ground kind of thing where it's really, you know, using what God set up as a plant and, you know, he could do it slower. Well, now we have more people. So it doesn't mean that we have a crisis. It just means we got to find ways to feed more people and feed them better. Because right now we're relying on, you know, plants. And I mean, you read any kind of research on what is still nutrition. And, you know, the supplement industry is soaring because, you know what, I could take AG1. I guess I should probably shouldn't medicine. take something and that's going to, you know, what if I just had a really good salad that was grown in my own barn? And I could do that myself in December.
Right.
So you're really putting the power back at the people's hands.
Yeah, I think what we're trying to do is create that and show them how, of course, we're bigger. We're commercial though, obviously.
Right. But
we just had a family come into our operation. They drove 2 hours away and they were looking for hydroponic because he's a farmer and he's concerned. And you know what he's doing? He built his own greenhouse and is going to do hydroponic.
Huh.
And he goes, hey, could I ask you some questions? And I'm like, absolutely. We're here to help, you know, and of course I can sell you this, but we're here to help.
And, right.
Yeah, but
I know you.
Yeah, good.
No, I mean I know you're commercial, but commercial would be going into a place like Winston or Townsend and saying we're going to set up this operation.
Yeah,
you guys are going to. Here's how much we would do it for. Let's negotiate this out where your kids are doing this much work.
Right.
Your community, the gardening club is coming in and doing something, and all of a sudden that becomes the center of the community. Because that's where the food comes from. So when you have events. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm sorry, but I'm getting like really excited. This is huge. I think this is huge.
Yeah, it is. You know, even in Amarillo, like you said, God has worked everything out for us. I mean, it's just amazing. But the bank there is family owned. It's one of the largest banks in Texas. Mm-hmm. And they opened us in like we're family. And they believe what they see.
Yeah.
And the great thing is to that, the hydroponic itself is just the phrase and the term and the means. The vertical farm is what we're doing differently. But hydroponic, though, would also be more of a different variety of yield that we would show them as well. So they may not understand how to do it, but we're not going to say you have to do vertical specifically what we're doing commercially. We want to say, yes, you have to do it across the board hydroponically with just water and nutrients and everything else. But we would show the difference. But we could also implement whatever would work for the community.
So how long do you think you'd be ready to do another community besides Amarillo? Just a guess.
Well, so we can actually have that together in 6 months pretty easily. There's just the parts and pieces we're putting together for our pre-patented materials, but everything we have access to, our suppliers are ready. So, mm-hmm. you know, of course, if we're going to grow substantially, we'll have to make sure those numbers are happening. But as far as a smaller community, I mean, we could actually start having talks today if that's really what they wanted to.
So what do you need?
It's just really all the supply issues. You know, we use a lot of different manufacturing parts from here and there. As far as our towers that we grow in, the vertical towers, we have a specific vendor we use that, of course, we could take more of the costs outside of what you'd see retail or traditional. So, you know, we're creating that atmosphere.
So, Larry, why do you do what you do?
Well, my main thing is, because I don't want to, I want to help people, I guess. That was my main thing. Just want to help people. And I love employing people and seeing them happy and seeing them prosper. And we've had some people that came on that needed some help. And it was just great to see them go. So, yeah.
Why food?
Well, because we know there's going to be a food shortage coming. It's already been told by many people and experts out in the field, farmers, and because of so-called weather changes. But it's been mainly because of neglect what's being grown.
And policy changes.
Yeah. And policy change. So if you have farms and all you're going to grow are nothing but grass, or you're going to grow nothing but filberts, or you're going to grow nothing but cotton, but you're going to let the food go away.
Right.
There's a problem, and it's usually government that controls all of that. And so we just felt that we were led into this situation to enhance produce in the marketplace for people who really need to eat.
Steve, why for you? What's your why?
It's really the giving back. And, you know, I've been that way my whole life, but it's also breaking down the walls that we've been putting up for so many years in our own country, as far as regulations, what we can and can't do. We're not here to say that's what we're wanting to spearhead and go against the system or anything. It's just, there's ways that we can actually adapt and create a more sustainable life for what we're doing. I just think we put the thought into making things too hard sometimes. You know, I look at it as I grew up in the era of no cell phones, and when I talk to some of my employees today, it's really funny. I go, do you guys know what call waiting is? And they just look at me like, what? And I go, man, that was a big thing when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, hey, I had my friends calling and my girlfriend's on the other line, you know, that kind of stuff. It's just kind of funny. But now you look to, and as you know, change, no one likes change. It's always something that someone has to accept or just move along with. So when I look at the non-cell phone era, and I'm working at Hewlett Packard, and I'm seeing all the changes technologically, and the internet's coming on board, and all these different things, well, where are we going with how do we sustain our food shortages, or what's coming at the price of food, everything? It's just so regulated for us, and we just know we can do it quicker and easier. So we're not going to walk around with eye goggles now, you know, because now you're really just getting a lot of information at one time. That's really not, I feel you have to get back to the root of the system, like the problem. Mm-hmm. Put your feet on the ground, put your hand, get your hands dirty, which we did. I mean, we've cleaned that facility and gotten it where it is, probably faster than anyone I know that could do it. But for us, it is that. It's giving back to communities, but also involving more and more to just say, hey, you know, these colleges could adapt our process. These cities could say we could grow this much crop yield. And I was going to answer your question. So we have hoop tunnel houses that are almost 50 feet wide by 240 feet long. So we have three of them side by side, and it's about an end zone short of a football field. In one section of that, we could grow 28 million tomatoes a year.
Wow.
Just mm-hmm. one section. So to say that and then mm-hmm. multiply it and multiply it and multiply it is, that's what our goal is commercially, obviously. But even in a small greenhouse that Larry was talking to you about, you could actually do leafy greens on this row of towers. You could do tomatoes in a different hydroponic setting in this row, and so on. And you could have a sustained process of growing like vegetables primarily.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Well said.
You know, and then for me, just because of my bent towards community stuff, that's what I really like the most about this. I see a need for people to have something they work together on mm-hmm. that they can all agree on. It's not the school board meeting or the, you know, affordable housing or, mm-hmm. you know, all this stuff. But you get on a, you know, you take on a community and you say, you grow your own food. Let's involve the high school. We have a lady in town who has a building as an old barber shop. And she said, yeah, I don't know what I'm going to do with it. And I said, she wanted to do some cooking. She has a kitchen in there. And I said, have you ever thought of doing like a pop-up kitchen? And she goes, what's that? And I explained it to her. Well, now she got a grant. Now she has school kids involved. They're helping to cook the food. They're also serving, learning to serve people and stuff. So they're getting an education. And then the kids, people, the community can come in. Her dream is, this hasn't happened yet, but the dream is that then, you know, we're having Mr. Esteva. He's going to come in and do tamales. And we're going to have a tamale dinner. And everybody comes in and people come in and you build the community. Well, what if you took that much farther and you're growing the products that you know, the salad was grown here by the kids and apples, you know, for the apple pie festival or whatever the heck it is. Right. But everybody gets involved because I think food's something that is supposed to bring us together, not make us fat and unhappy and not comfortable. Right. Food should make us uncomfortable, I think. You know what I mean?
You have to
work with it. So, oh my gosh, I hadn't. Yeah. This was fun. I like that.
And you know, Rick, we're in smaller communities here in Montana.
Yeah.
But I don't think people realize that a lot of the grocery stores you see are individually owned.
Yeah.
I don't think people really understand. They think maybe, you know, like a Safeway or United or a Kroger or anywhere else. I think they just think it's part of that system. But whoever owns that store has to have the overhead and the costs. And I've seen locally, they're the last ones on the shipment. They get kind of the leftovers, it feels, not as high of quality of produce. And so when they're paying a premium right now for, say, lettuce or even the smaller things, it hurts them because they can't sell it. So they're throwing away more than what they actually, you know, it's just, it's a real problem. I don't think people really understand that. So we have to keep these grocery stores going and we have to keep feeding the people.
So how do people get a hold of you guys if they have questions?
So we're working on our website now. It's brushwoodacrefarms.com. I know it's a long title. We're also working on a few other things, but we can share that with you. Maybe, you know,
okay.
Give us a shout out.
Okay. Okay. I think we should do this again sometime. This is going to air tonight.
I'm
going to get it on there tonight. So it'll be out there. Then you guys can share it as you wish. You guys stick around in the green room real quick. I have to close up the show, but I want to talk to you real fast. Okay.
Okay.
All right. So stay in the green room for just a second. Oh, you're welcome. It's good having both of you. Okay. So that hits all my buttons. Okay. You guys know why I do what I do, right? Because everybody should have a voice. And gosh, about your food sources, Yes, we should be. The more I'm hearing about what we're getting, the more I know. We got to be careful. We got to understand where our food's coming from. We got to start teaching our kids that a chicken egg doesn't come from a carton. It comes from a chicken's butt. I mean, there's a process here. Cows are milked. They don't just magically walk around the field. And there's stuff that goes on in the world. And this would bring back that whole concept to people to understand you grow your own food. And there's a pride in that. Ask anybody that has their own garden. When you grow, we just have raspberries. And when Kathy and I, at the end of the year, pick all those raspberries, we get like, I'm still making smoothies in the morning with my raspberries. And when I make those smoothies, I know where those raspberries came. I know what it took for me to take care of those. I know what the water was I used and what else I put on them to make them nutritious. That matters. That stuff matters. Take this, please share it on your page. Let other people know what's going on. I am headed back to Oregon for a week to do some of our Truth About Timber series that we're putting on, telling people that sustainability is about timber. Trees store carbon, and carbon is what everybody's all, not everybody, but what some people are all concerned about. So why don't we manage our trees better? That's the question we're asking with this series is, why don't we manage our trees better? There's a lot of questions we should be asking. I'm fortunate to have grown up in a family where my parents were both teachers, and they said, and they meant it, there's no such thing as a stupid question. So I ask a lot of questions that people think are stupid, but guess what? They're not. They just don't want to answer them. And then that should lead you to wonder why. So I'm going to keep asking the stupid questions. I hope you keep asking them too and listen. And I hope you find out more about this because, you know, Townsend, Winston, Helena, you know, and whatever your town is, Lebanon, Sweet Home, Springfield, Coburg. Could you see one of these little farms in your yard, in your community where it all brought you together for a harvest festival in the fall? I'm just dreaming. Have a good night. Thank you for watching. And again, please share this on your page. It really does matter. Facebook doesn't like me that much. And I'm so charming. I don't understand. Good night.